Got it. Alrighty, thank you, Aaron. Appreciate it. Don't get the weather there in the clump. Wasn't sure what that was.
Sorry about that. I didn't check it. Going to
That's right. That's right. Nope.
You can tell us what it is. How's it feel out there?
Cold. It's kind of cold.
Yeah.
The sun keeps going in and out. But I still dove in the water anyway. Diving in again. Why did you say earlier today, Tom, please leave this lady alone?
Well, because Hannah is on a well-deserved vacation, and Jacob persists in tracking her down on her vacation to ask her a question to clarify where, for instance, the money comes from for the incentives to lure us into vaccinations. Mm-hmm. And this poor woman is so responsible, she points out, by the way, I'm on vacation, but I'll check into that for you, and then gives us a nice response.
Vacation, vacation, Tom.
Oh, no, is she here now?
Yes.
Oh, I'm my God.
My vacation was over yesterday.
Yes,
today.
Tom.
Yes, it was over today. It's okay.
Yeah, see?
But thanks for looking out for me. I appreciate
That's right.
that. Very
we need
much
you
so.
In for the long haul. We can't afford to have you burn out too early.
By the way, how long was that vacation? What, 4 days? What were you on?
It was, like 4 days. I don't know. Oh. It was a multi-day bachelorette party, so I don't know what happened anymore.
Oh, wow.
I'm lucky I made it back. No, it was
multi-day. All right, let's get to the news. So, what was the bachelorette like?
No, she had a good time. She had a good time. Definitely.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about the fact that Seattle City Council wants to do more to reduce affordable housing.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No,
I'm sorry.
No,
what they want to do is they want to make it harder for landlords to collect rent.
Right. So there's a series of bills that they just they took up yesterday. And these are more renter protections. We've got one that prevents most evictions during the school year. So for students, that is for students who are affected with their parents, so you couldn't evict their parents. And then also for school employees as well. There would also have to be for most cases, you'd have to offer lease renewals for many renters. And then it would also prevent a lot of the post-pandemic evictions. So already, I believe that Seattle had passed something where even once the eviction moratoriums end, we were going to have, I believe it was for another 6 months, you were not going to be allowed. It would be like the eviction moratorium was still in effect. You wouldn't be able to do any of the things like evict people for anything. So you'd have to follow all those rules. This goes beyond that and prevents landlords from doing a lot of post-pandemic evictions. They also passed a resolution asking both the governor and the mayor to extend the moratoriums. So the eviction moratoriums right now are due to expire both at the state level and in the city of Seattle level at the end of this month, so June 30th. So the resolution is non-binding. Obviously, they're just asking. I will say this, though. I was at a press conference with Mayor Durkan, I think it was last week, and I asked if she was going to allow hers to expire, and she straight up said, I don't think it's a good idea. I haven't decided yet. She's going to talk to the governor, look into some numbers, but she felt like it was a bad idea. So you
Which
may have
some support
there.
Which was a bad idea, to extend it or not extend
it? It was a bad idea to let it expire, so is what I had asked her. So she.
So here's my here's my Spidey sense kind of question. If the city responds to these requests to extend it till the end of the year, which is what they're asking for, again, not binding, it's just a request, isn't there a sense, well, heck, we got a good thing going for these renters. Why not extend it past? Because they say, we're in the middle of winter right now. Let's extend it. Keep extending. At some point, they're going to have to bite the bullet, no?
Well, so you could extend it, and then you would be in winter, and then the winter eviction ban would be in effect, right?
Which would be practically year-round.
There are some who want that, some on the council and many in the city who do want that. And
want people to live for free in someone's house?
Housing is a human right, and
it's not a human right.
That's what they say, and that's so. There's
but
that effort. There's an effort for rent control and all of that is still out there. from Shama Sawant and both some of those in the state legislature as well.
Yeah.
So now, there is that underlying thing going on.
If you owned a building, Tom, let's say you owned a store and somebody, let's say you sold expensive whatever it is. Let's say you owned an AquaQuip and someone came in and stole a barbecue from you every month, a $1,000 barbecue from you every month. And the city council came along and said, it's legal for this person to come in and steal $1,000 from you every single month. How long would you stay in business, or how long would you want to be in business selling whatever you are while a person is legally allowed to steal from you every single month?
Well, yes. At some point, you'd say, to heck with it. I'm getting out. And if I'm, especially if I'm a mom and pop landlord, I am going to sell out to the corporate overlords that can maybe take a hit like that and it not really matter. And that's why I have no problem.
Oh, no. Let me just to clear that up. Corporate overlords, because corporations are bad, what they do is they jack up the rent, right? What they do is they jack up the rent so that they get a different type of person in there. They take the old broken down house, whatever, they either bulldoze it and then build up on it because the dirt is more expensive, more valuable than the actual structure itself. So now the rent goes from $1,800 to $4,000. So now we're renting to the techie guy rather than the other person that could afford it. So the overlord government court is in the business of making money, and they will make money, and those are the changes that will occur. Hannah, here's the interesting thing. If I'm a teacher and I'm making $75,000 or $80,000 living in the city of Seattle, why would I be evicted?
That's not a lot of money to live in Seattle, just I'll let you know that right now. But you could be evicted if you were affected by the pandemic. You could be, it depend. You know, there could be a multitude of circumstances. Maybe you lost your job in the middle when...
No, but they're sort of carving out one particular occupation, which is teacher.
No, and it's for school employees, so it's not just teachers. It's for anyone who works at the school and also for students. So no school year evictions. I think they did this in San Francisco and in San Diego where they have these programs. But as was pointed out in some of the public comment yesterday, those two jurisdictions allowed for some outs for your small and pop landlords and some very specific circumstances, which I don't believe this does. And that was part of the pushback. So let me just show you here. So here's more than 100 people showed up to talk about, to speak on this yesterday. Here's what the pro side had to say.
Many thousands in our city are on the edge of survival. Capitalism routinely sacrifices the well-being of the many in order to protect the profits of the few. And the impact of this trauma is always hardest on people of color, the disabled, LGBTQ, and other marginalized individuals.
Supporting these transformative tenant protections is supporting those at greatest risk of eviction, women with children. We clearly know evictions are a leading cause of homelessness, yet somehow we as a community can't be willing to accept that the infinite traumas to children and families will be perpetrated if we are willing to pretend that the pandemic didn't happen and that old lease laws biased in favor of landlords are a more important precedent to uphold than setting a new one. We won't let thousands of children and families be destroyed because of factors outside their control. This shouldn't even be an option.
Without these protections, how is the city going to address the massive number of evictions that when the moratorium is ending? We know the majority of folks who are going to be evicted are going to end up homeless.
So there's a lot of that.
And okay, well, John, we're going to hit the other side, too. Hold
yes, the other side. Here comes the con side. A lot of people came to speak against it.
CV-120046 allow a tenant to not pay rent and also would make the eviction window so small it could be impossible to practically enforce, leaving small housing providers stuck with no income and effectively no property. Let's protect students and teachers better than any other city in the nation, but let's also provide a single lifeline for small housing providers.
Deep-pocketed investors with big legal teams are becoming the only ones who can meet the intense demand for Seattle housing, which just keeps getting more expensive and more exclusive. Council should do everything you can to help get federal and state funding to renters and housing providers who most need it, and focus on enabling as many local owner-operators as possible to offer safe, stable places for renters to live, with reasonable protections for all parties. In trying to cancel rent and stop all evictions, the city council is causing even wider problems. Your ongoing legislative tsunami has disproportionate impacts on small providers and is creating a more deeply inequitable and unaffordable city.
Yeah.
So a lot of that.
Obvious.
Well,
it's so
obvious.
First of all, First of all, there's $47 billion that the federal government has taken from taxpayers and out of the private market that has been sent to these to states in order to be able to allow the rents to be paid.
Rental
the system is so screwed up that they can't get the money to the people. First of all, what I don't understand is why are they making the tenant apply for and go ahead and get proof of in order to get the money? What do they care? They've lived rent-free for almost an entire year or 15 months. It's not their money. Why should they go ahead and try to get the $47 billion to give to the landlord? Why don't you let the landlords go get the money that is their money? That's the crazy thing
do.
About this.
What, landlord and tenant assistance, the landlords have to apply and fill that out to get like 80%. Those are the county and some of the state programs that have been around for a while.
Right. But that aside, this idea that you're going to allow the person to basically live, if I was a teacher, here's how I'd work the system. I would not pay my rent. I'd stop paying rent in March. I go March, April, May, June, I would stop paying rent. So I'd live rent free for 3 months, and then they take another 3 months. They can't kick you out during the summer. Or don't pay during the summer, and then when the school year starts, stop paying there and you can live rent free. Would people do that, Tom? Or do you think people are way too honest and wouldn't do that?
No, I think way too honest. More people are honest than not. But so here's my question for Hannah.
Yeah.
What percentage of renters do you know of aren't paying during the pandemic?
I'm glad you asked. And I don't know, you know, there's anecdotally, and I had been speaking to some landlord groups a couple of weeks ago, and I asked that very question. And the numbers I get are it's somewhere like, you know, between 4 to 8% maybe are not paying.
Yeah.
Are not paying. I'm sorry. I think I misunderstood your question. Are not paying intentionally, not necessarily because they need to not pay. That was the number I had asked for. So it's a little bit higher number for those who are not. I think we're in double digits for sure.
Okay, but see, the people that are arguing vociferously on John's side of the issue, we make it sound like it's everybody. Like everybody who's doing that didn't pay rent for the last 15 months, where it's like 90% or 85% are paying rent normally. So these are some, not everybody.
Right,
here,
some here
are
not
the numbers.
Everybody,
Hannah,
but there are
I know
people
been...
working the system. Yeah. There are people taking advantage, for sure. And the bottom line is, and I think I told you guys this before, there are landlords who can take this hit, who aren't, who have been working, you know, they've been renting here forever, and they've had long-term tenants. I can't remember if I had this on your show, but there was an older woman I had spoken to who was in her 70s. She has 6, 7, 8 properties, I think, across the state. She is selling every one of them as their tenants move out. Because the most are in Seattle, and they're taking their business out of state. And that's not the first time I've heard that. That is a growing issue, and it's going to have a very long-term impact on this state.
Here, I know you've been on vacation, Hannah, partying with the girls in Vegas.
Yeah.
So 89,475 households, this is Seattle and Bellevue, are behind in rent. That is 11% of those surveyed, according to mid-April. 11%. Those are those surveyed, 11% of the 89,000. Okay. So that's a little more than 8,000, 9,000 that are behind on the rent. But the other part of it is how many of them are receiving $3,000 or $4,000 from the federal government and staying home, sitting on the couch with their kids and not paying the landlord. If you believe that a house is a human right, that changes the entire dynamics of the economy. Then you say, well, then the landlord has no right to be paid. Only the tenant has a right. The landlord has no right because profits are not a human right, and money and mortgages and interest rates are also not human rights. So once you put it into a new sphere of human right, housing, everything goes out the window, right? Then it doesn't matter. Healthcare is a human right. Well, who pays for it? Who knows? But we just determined it to be a human right. So that's what they're doing. You have people, socialists, seeing it as a human right. Now it's outside the sphere of economics, and now anybody can live anywhere they want and not have to pay any rent.
Okay. Go ahead, Anna.
I would just say, again, there is that push for that. So that's what you have to understand when we're talking about Seattle and evictions and rent and all of that. It's not, it predates the pandemic. There's long been this push from Sawan and some others now on the council to make this kind of change. And again, all the way up to the state legislature. Every single session, we have more bills that lean that direction. And I think you'll definitely see rent control come up here soon again. And, you know, I don't know if it passes, but it depends on the makeup of the legislature at the time. But there's an appetite for that. And it's harder because the ridiculousness of the cost of rent in this state that has happened over the last 10 years, as not all incomes go up, is there's a lot going on to this conversation. But mom and pop landlords, they're the ones that get left behind every time.
Here's the one that we all agree. Go ahead, Tom, and I'll say something.
Okay, I have another percentage question. Ooh, do you happen to know the percentage of what they, because they make this distinction, and you just did too, about the corporate landlords can afford, they have teams, and they can afford to take the hit and argue in court. What is the percentage of, say, mom-and-pop landlords, which I don't know would be how many units, I don't know what would be included in that, but let's say two properties or 10 units or something.
I think it's under 10 or something, yeah.
Okay, so mom and pop, how many, what percentage, like how many, if you've got 100% of the rentals, how much of them are owned by mom and pop operations versus corporate? Do we have any idea?
I am going to take my old friend Mike Lewis's advice and tell you I don't know, because I don't know that number.
Okay, good. Okay,
here's the one thing
that
I think
also would
all,
be helpful.
Here's what I think is a half. Here's the thing we all agree on. If there's more of something, then the price comes down. Agreed? If you have more housing and you have more competition, the price comes down. Now, do the changes in the city council when it comes to eviction, will this increase the number of people wanting to get into the market to provide housing or decrease that number? And then when it comes to rents, if you have rent control, will that make more people want to build houses and provide apartments or less? Ultimately, what you will see is the cost of housing in Seattle will continue to increase far beyond other places, one, that don't have rent control, and two, that don't have socialists believing that housing is a human right. The prices of houses will continue to escalate in the city of Seattle because of that mindset. We will not create more houses. We will create less homes. The price will continue to go up.
Yeah, listen, they tried to, Alex Peterson tried to get an amendment added to this yesterday that would have exempted units under, or landlords with under five units. That failed. So that tells you kind of the mindset of both him and Deborah Warr has opposed it, but it's still passed. And nobody ever, I never hear any talk on the council about the things that you just brought up.
No, they don't understand. So. It's supply and demand. It's the simplest thing. By the way, at the bachelorette party, were you wearing were you wearing hats that said "same blank for the rest of my life"?
It's hilarious that you asked me that. I bought her a sash that said exactly that.
A sash? That's even better than a hat.
Thank you, Hannah. Ba-ba-ba-ba. Keel Mortgage, 1-888-77-AKIEL. Jacob, put up that video of me enjoying my mental health day with my son.
Yes, that's on both on our Facebook and our Twitter account right now.
Okay. By the way, hit that drive, 278, almost 280 yards, and went right in the water. Didn't even know I could actually hit the water. That's how far I hit it.
Crazy. The only guy that wants a mark against him for hitting the
care.
Water.
I was like, Ron goes, oh, my God, I think you drove that into the water. I'm like, yeah, all right. Drove it into the water.
In the video, you also say you found the driver you used. It feels like you came across it on the side of the road or something. Where did you, what's the backstory?
It was just sitting in somebody's bag, and it was unattended.
Very odd. Very odd. That whole bag of clubs showed up at our house one day, like 3 years ago. I said to Ryan, who's golf clubs are these? I don't know. And had the guy's name on the bag. It wasn't even local. Just there. We think it was somebody that was renting a room from us, had a boyfriend or something. Anyway, the bag is just giant golf club. And look at me enjoying the fruits of the lake. I only bring that thing out on once around. And the other nice thing is Sun Country, everybody there is so old that no one bothers to look for their ball. Because I'm not gonna, I'm not going in the bushes looking for that thing. So you could just go into the bushes and find all sorts of golf balls. So Ryan and I was like, hey, we're up three. Speaking of balls, in the news, when a baseball leaves a pitcher's hand, if he's throwing a curveball, normally it's about 88 miles an hour. And the big thing you talk about is the spin rate of the ball. So Major League Baseball, a fastball will rotate 2,200 revolutions per minute as the ball is spinning, and how the ball spins and how it finally makes it 60 feet 6 inches away, or at least hoping to get 60 feet 6 inches just before the bat comes through and hits the thing. If you, it is the most amazing thing, and there are tons of videos. You could put enough little sticky stuff, something sticky on the ball, or you drive your fingernails into the edge of the ball. In some way, it affects the rotation of the ball, thus making the pitches more effective to get by the batters. Thus, eureka, that's why hardly anyone is hitting the ball well this year.
Yeah, for some reason, more pitchers use it against the Mariners than any other team in baseball.
Oh, apparently. Yeah.
So, but still, yeah, this is, you know, as long as you and I have been alive, John, we've had stories, you know, some of the most famous pitchers in the history of the game were famous for putting stuff on the ball. And it's always been against the rules. It's always been deemed as cheating, and it's always been sort of acknowledged and kind of, you know, the umpires look away or the other team looks away. One of the interesting problems if one team, let's say one manager really decides to go all out and do this, and there occasionally, I think it was in the Boston New York series, one of the teams called out the other team because they said, here's the problem. I know every pitcher does it, but that guy is so lazy about hiding, and he's not even trying hard enough. And so, you know, he called him out. I think he got a 10-game suspension, which is what the rule is supposed to be. But since everybody is doing it, famously, there was a pitcher, you know, a really good pitcher who acknowledged that he thinks, I would guess about 70% of us use some kind of sticky stuff, some kind of goo. It's often a combination of pine tar and rosin or something like that. And others say that's probably low. It may be closer to 100%, that it's just an understood part of the game. And as long as they don't get caught, you know, you're okay. So now there's a lawsuit, you know, involved that baseball is trying to crack down because a Twins player, called out somebody on an opposing team, Garrett Cole, you know, that his spin rate was ridiculous and it never was that much, so there clearly must be something going on. Mm-hmm. And so baseball is trying to crack down, they claim, and everyone in the baseball world says, yeah, right. Like, they're going to say the right things, but nobody's going to do it because it still comes down to the umpires and the managers. Yes. Well, the umpires are not going to want to interfere. People hate the umpires enough already. If they started checking every pitcher, every inning, let alone every pitcher, every batter, it would slow. Baseball's already too slow a game. It would slow them down. And no manager is going to call out the other team because he realizes all of his pitchers are probably doing it too. But yeah. Supposedly, their new proposal is that starting pitchers will likely undergo umpire checks at least two times a start, most likely as they're walking off the mound because they don't want to interrupt the game. And they say, okay, so let's say in the seventh inning, an umpire stops a guy and says, oh, you know, you've got sticky stuff. We're going to give you a 10-game suspension. What happens to those first seven innings where he probably was using the stuff? Are they invalidated? Do you play the game over? Well, no, you're not going to do that. You just sort of carry on. And then all the batters whose batting average has now been reduced because this guy has been cheating don't have any recourse either. There's the problem with baseball is when you catch him cheating, there's no good recourse that helps anybody in the league.
They're so good at it. You can take the rosin bag, pick up the rosin bag that's behind you, mm-hmm. Get the powder on you. Then you can take a little bit of your sunscreen that's on the back of your neck, mm-hmm. and then you rub those two together, get sticky. Or you do the stuff at the top that's your stuff behind your hair that you stick in your... So everybody's adding it to the ball. You could switch balls after every pitch.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could just let this be part of the game. When it came to football, Fred Biletnikoff, he used to play for the Oakland Raiders, was famous for the fact that he had sticky stuff all over his hands. He would be on the sidelines with this big thing of stick'em.
Yeah.
I think it was called stick'em, and it had a tongue depressor in it. And you would see him, and they're like, there's Fred Biletnikoff getting ready to come into the game. And he's just sticking this stuff, super, super tacky stuff would be on the end of his hands. And finally, the NFL said, okay, you got to get rid. That's ridiculous. Yeah. He was making these diving catches with one hand.
Yeah,
for the pitchers,
that are like five inches beyond his reach, and they still get caught because the stick'em stuck out.
It was glue. He had glue on his hands. So for these guys, you could switch the ball. Pitcher throws the ball, and the catcher catches it, hands it to the ump. The ump hands him a brand new ball, and it goes in, right? And now what? You're going to watch the pitcher take the ball. He looks at it. Does he then have to add more? You say the game is already too slow. Right. I saw somebody said today, I saw an article, the guy said, just let him do it.
Yes.
Let him. You can't enforce it. Let him do it. Let him do it. Whatever they're going to do it. And they also point to the fact, we don't normally talk sports. We love the analytics of these things. People are swinging for the fences.
Yeah.
Just like the study going, you're better off going for it on fourth down, statistically speaking.
Mm-hmm.
You're better off just swinging like a crazy man every single time for the fences. Sure, your overall runs batted in, everything will begin to change on you, but just go for home runs. Just always go for home runs. And the game is changing that way.
Part and parcel to that is that you used to be ashamed to strike out. Now it's just considered part of the game. The guys with the most home runs are also the guys that have the most strikeouts more often than not. Because, they're always swinging for the fences. And that's their best. That's the batter's best defense against the pitchers. Yeah, the guy who's calling for just to accept it as part of the game, a guy named Zachary Reimer. And what he says is, so listen, there's no good way to control this. So his suggestion is a kind of compromise. You allow one particular substance that's league supervised and that's available on the mound, every mound in Major League Baseball. Obviously, it couldn't be get in the way or trip over, but it's available. And so as long as you legalize that, then if they came up with something else, then you might have a legitimate gripe. But he says that way they just sort of acknowledge it and let the game carry on. And I think that's probably the best solution. But right now, pitchers are getting too good and hitters are behind the eight ball, so to speak. Maybe we ought to allow steroids for the hitters so they can connect harder. Just acknowledge, hey, we're all cheaters. What the hell? Everybody's cheating. So, it's a level playing field.
But it's not cheating if you've changed the rules.
That's true. That's right.
Good. I went down time real quick. My brother told me the beauty is the next generation. My brother and I and friends of ours used to work at the Fast Pitch on the boardwalk in Ocean City, New Jersey. And my brother told me the good news is the next generation has stepped up. This is our friend now has a kid that is doing the exact same thing that we used to do when we used to control the speed gun on the Fast Pitch on the Ocean City boardwalk.
You mean you would manipulate the speed gun?
Oh! Oh!
You cheater! You're terrible!
I'll tell you what, after this break, I'll tell you what we used to do. We roared on that. All right. And then, by the way, if you're ever on the Ocean City Boardwalk, I'll tell you what not to wear if you want a legitimate speed on the ball. We'll be here's Tracy Taylor, look at traffic. Real quick, so my brother and I used to work at Ocean City Boardwalk, and we got a job. McBride somehow related us, I don't know how, got us a job working the Fast Pitch on the boardwalk, which was you get three pitches for $2 or $3, I forget what it was, and you guys would stand there, they could back up a little bit, and this is when those speed guns came out. It was a really big deal. Right, and it was very accurate, and we would throw, just my brother and I would throw, and other people would throw, and we just kind of have a general idea what it was. But the first guy, we would then have a signal to each other that that the person that was about to throw the ball was somebody we didn't like. We would just judge them, and I would say the thing it was Ernie. I'd say, Ernie, why don't you take the gun? And then that meant that you then set it a certain way. So the first pitch was legitimately thrown, and we did not do anything to alter the speed. Okay? And normally the first pitch that somebody throws is like 68, 70 miles an hour, which is pretty fast. And nobody ever warms up. Second pitch, yeah. You then dial it down about 10. So it's coming in at about 54. Now, remember, they're throwing harder on the second pitch.
Yeah.
Okay. Aha! Now, the boomer is the third pitch is you just take it back up to where it's supposed to be, but now the person is throwing so hard, so unbelievably hard to get it back up above 53 that often they would, you could see they would grimace in pain or they'd grab their elbow or tip over. And the rule was this: if they were excessively tan, if they had a tank top on with some type of writing on it, and this is very popular back in Ocean City, New Jersey in the late 70s, if they also wore boots, not flip-flops, but boots without socks untied and long shorts, they would then get a chance to experience a dislocated or need Tommy John surgery by the end of the summer. Those were our three things.
I guess it's a statute of limitations, right? If I threw my arm out and had to have medical surgery to repair it, I'd come after you two scoundrels.
It's 7 years. Besides, you got to directly show that it was because of the second pitch.
Oh, my God. No wonder you don't trust that vaccine. You're afraid the curlies are behind it.
Well, the good news is that the guys that we used to do that with, their kids are now running it, and we told them how to do it.
Oh, my God.
And they're coming up with their own sort of judging thing as to why.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That's it was funny. The best summer.
No regrets, eh?
There were times you could see the person in some serious pain. And then you'd be like, yeah.
Oh, my God. Sometimes boost people that you liked?
Yeah, cute girls. But that never came back. The cute girl never went, hey, I threw that faster than I thought. I think I want to date that guy for an hour. It never came back around again. You know what I mean, Tracy Taylor? You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
Like, okay.
You could embarrass the boyfriend in front of the girlfriend. They might break up and date you.
Yes. And then she comes back.
That's exactly what it is. Yep.
Yeah. And then she's like, I, for some reason, I'm really attracted to the guy running that boot.
At least he's not wearing a tank top with boots.
No, but you had an apron tied around your waist that had all the money in it. Oh, my. There was nothing sexy
Very
about
sexy.
That. Very sexy. All right. Sorry.